Welcome to installment 338 of Sefer Mitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's portion contains six commandments. Prohibition number 46 is the prohibition from making a permanent dwelling in Egypt. Positive commandment 190 governs the operation of an optional war, a milchemes reshus. Prohibition 56 is a prohibition against making peace with the nations of Moab and Ammon. Prohibition 57 is a prohibition not to cut down a fruit-bearing tree in the middle of a war. Positive commandment 192 and 193 both regard the disposal of bodily wastes in the middle of wartime. Positive commandment 192 is that one must designate a place outside the camp in which to dispose of these wastes. And positive commandment 193 is that one must carry some sort of implement to dig up the ground in order that this waste could be covered over. The first commandment of today's portion is Prohibition 46. This is the prohibition to return to live in the land of Egypt. One is allowed to live anywhere in the world, with the exception of the land of Egypt. It was singled out, the Rambam tells us, because of their deeds and their behaviors, which were so much worse than any place else in the world, their terrible denial of the existence of God and His control over the world. And in order to keep us away from their beliefs, and in order that we should not learn from their heresy, and to behave like them, the Torah commanded us not to live in such a place. There are three different verses, the Rambam tells us, which relate this prohibition. In the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 17, verse 16, Leseisifun loshuv baderach hazeh oit. You must no longer return back to this place, back to this path, meaning you cannot return back to the land of Egypt. In Deuteronomy 28, verse number 68, we are told, baderach hasher amarti lecha, on the path that I spoke to you about, Leseisif oit liresa, no longer go back to see it. Again, referring about the path back to Egypt. And a third verse in the book of Exodus, chapter 14, verse 13, Ki asher re'isem es Mitzrayim hayayim, that you see the Egyptians today, lo yisisifu l'reisem eid ad elam, you will no longer see them again forever. This is referring to when the Jews were leaving Egypt for the first time. They were told they will no longer see them, which although, according to the simple meaning, is just telling a story, a fact that they will no longer see the Egyptians, it has been passed on by the oral tradition that this is also a verse prohibiting the return to Egypt. As our sages say that there are three places where the Torah warns us against returning. In addition, there were three times in Jewish history where people violated this prohibition. And for all three times they were punished. Once was in the days of Sancheriv, another time in the days of Yechon and Ben-Karia, and a third time in the days of Trajan, as explained in the Mechilta, and all three times the Jewish people were punished. In the end of the Gemara at Sukkah, the Talmud indicates exactly what is considered Egypt for the purpose of this prohibition. The city of Alexandria was included in this prohibition, and from the sea by Alexandria, we mention 400 parsa in either direction, making a square of 400 by 400 parsa. And this is the area which is forbidden by the Torah in which to reside. Alexandria was one of the greatest and most proud communities in Jewish history, with great wealth and a tremendous number of Jews and an interest in Judaism at that time in Alexandria. Nevertheless, in the days of Alexander the Great, the entire city was destroyed and the Jewish people were killed. The Gemara asks, why did this happen? And the sages say that it was a punishment for their transgressing on the prohibition of living in Egypt, since Alexandria was also part of Egypt. The Jerusalem Talmud tells us, however, that there are certain cases in which one is allowed to enter Egypt in order to merely do business there, or to pass through in order to go somewhere else, or for the purpose of making a war. For any of these purposes, one may enter Egypt. However, one is not allowed to enter Egypt in order to settle there, in order to live there permanently. The obvious question here is, the Rambam himself lived in Egypt for many years. How could he violate this prohibition? There is in the Sefer Kaftava Ferach written an account that one of the Rambam's grandchildren claimed that he saw a letter or letters from the Rambam that he signed after his name, the one who violates three prohibitions daily, referring to the three verses mentioned here saying one may not live in Egypt. However, the existence of such a letter is hotly contested by all of the commentaries, and even should he have written it, the question is what he meant by that. But the basic question is, how was the Rambam allowed to live in Egypt? Many different answers are given for this. One is that the Chumash says you should not see or return baderech hazeh oid, in this path, in this road, meaning one is forbidden from leaving Israel and going to Egypt. But if one comes to Egypt from another place, as the Rambam did from Spain, it is permitted. Another explanation, which the Radbaz gives, is that the Rambam was forced. The Rambam was not allowed to leave Egypt. Since he had become a physician to the court, he was held there against his will. So although, in a certain sense, he was violating the prohibition, but it was against his free will, he would have left it only at the risk of his life. And in such a case, a person's life is more important than the commandment, and therefore he violates the prohibition in order to save his life. So too the Radbaz says was the case with the Rambam, that he lived in Egypt in order not to be killed by the Egyptian government. However, in the Tshuvas, the Radbaz gives another explanation. And he says that it is clear from the Jerusalem Talmud, which the Rambam quotes in Sefer HaMitzvahs, that the prohibition is only if one desires to live there permanently. However, when the Rambam lived in Egypt, he certainly had belief in the imminent arrival of Mashiach, and he had no intention of remaining there permanently. He knew that he would be coming soon to the land of Israel, and he had a desire to go there. He didn't want to live in Egypt. He was just there temporarily in the time before Mashiach should come and bring him back to the land of Israel. Therefore, he did not violate the prohibition because he only looked at his residence there as a temporary one. Positive Commandment 190 discusses the type of war known as Milchemes Reshus. As we mentioned in previous shiurim, there is an obligation to kill out the nation of Amalek, as well as the seven nations which once inhabited the land of Israel, known as the land of Canaan. This is known as a Milchemes Mitzvah, a war which is required, which is a commandment. However, there are other wars known as Milchemes Reshus, that we are allowed to make such a war for whatever purpose, for protection, to gain land, and so on. However, one is not required to take part in these wars. The Jewish people are not required to make such a war. However, once such a war is embarked upon, there are certain requirements and certain laws governing the conduct of such a war. These laws are Positive Commandment 190, how exactly the war shall be conducted. The section is in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 20, verses 11 and 12 and so on, which discuss what happens when one starts making a war. The law is we must first offer the inhabitants a chance to make peace, to make a covenant, a peace agreement. They must agree, first of all, to give their land away. And although the Rambam does not mention it here in Sefer HaMitzvahs, he mentions in his legal code that they must accept upon themselves the seven Noahide commandments and agree to abide by these commandments. Furthermore, they must accept upon themselves to pay taxes and to be enslaved. As the verse says, Yiyu l'cho l'mas v'avaducha, that they shall be for you to pay taxes and to serve you as slaves. And the Sifri says that if they do one without the other, if they accept one without the other, one is not allowed to make peace with them. If they accept to give taxes but not to be enslaved, or vice versa, one may not make peace with them. It must be both. What is this tax? Every year, the Jewish king determines how much tax they shall have to pay for the needs of the land and for the Jewish people. And what is this slavery? They must agree to follow all of the commands of the Jewish people and behave towards them with fear, with awe, and with shiflus, with humility, and accept a downgraded status in the face of the Jewish people who have conquered the land. Should they refuse to make peace, and the law is in that case that one kills all of the males, all of the adults and the children, all of the males are put to death. The final decision in the Rambam's legal code, however, is that only the adult males are put to death and not the children. As the verse says, "Va'anoshim v'taf," the women and children are not put to death. Rather, they are taken captive. As the Rambam says here, also, all of their belongings are taken as spoils of war. There are many other details discussed in the Rambam's legal code, For example, one is required to surround the city with no more than three directions. One must give them a chance to escape, leaving one open side, so when they decide to give up the battle, they can run away and not necessarily be killed. The details of this commandment are discussed in the 8th chapter of Sota and the 2nd chapter of Sanhedrin. Although, as we learned in Positive Commandment 190, we are not allowed to kill the inhabitants of these cities unless we first ask them to surrender and make peace, nevertheless, we have a prohibition against asking for surrender in the cases of the nations of Ammon and Moab. And this is prohibition number 56. In general, we first go to the city and we ask them to hand over the city and to give us taxes and to submit themselves to servitude and to accept upon themselves the seven commandments. Should they not do so, then we are commanded to kill the males of the city. However, when it comes to these two nations of Ammon and Moab, we are forbidden from asking them for peace in the first place. This commandment is derived from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 23, verse 7, which states, L'sidre shleimam v'tevasam, you may not ask them for peace and for their good, meaning that you should not ask them to make peace in the first place. As the Sifri says, that since we have the commandment from Positive Commandment 190, Ki sikra vel ir li lachem aleh, when you come to make war on a city, v'karasa aleh l'shalem, you must ask it for peace. You might think the same applies even for these nations of Ammon and Moab. Therefore we have our verse, L'sidre shleimam v'tevasam. You should not ask them for peace. Rather, once it comes time to make war, you go directly into the war. Later in that parasha, speaking about a slave that ran away from his master to the land of Israel, the verse says, Batevle, is allowed to live wherever he wants once he comes to Israel. We might think, the Rambam quotes the Sifri as saying, that so too a slave from Ammon or Moab can also live wherever he wants. Therefore the verse says the Sifri, Batevasam, ko yamecha adelam, liyelam, that you are not allowed to ask for their peace forever, that one must never ask them for their peace, even after they become a slave and wish to dwell in the land of Israel. Ammon and Moab are excluded. However, in the Rambam's legal code, he does tell us that should the inhabitants of the nations of Moab and Ammon desire by themselves for peace, and should they come to us and say they want to make a treaty of peace, in that case, we accept them. Rather, we should not be the ones to first inspire or instigate peace with them, that they should be the ones to request. And should they not do so, we kill them right away. The reason why these two nations are singled out from all the other nations of the world is told to us explicitly in the previous verses. There in the book of Deuteronomy, it is also said that the nations of Moab and Ammon are singled out in that one must not marry converts from these nations. What is so terrible about these nations? The verse continues and says that they did not greet us with bread and water when we left Egypt. When the Jewish people went by the nations of Ammon and Moab, we asked them for some bread and water in the way, and they refused to give it to us. Furthermore, the verse says that they hired Bilaam in order to curse the Jewish people, and therefore arouse God's wrath against the Jewish people. We therefore see they should be avoided and despised for two reasons. First of all, in that they implanted immorality among the Jewish people. And second of all, because of their extreme lack of gmilas chasadim and kindness. These are traits which are so much to be avoided according to Jewish tradition. We are forbidden from making peace from them, from having any connection with them. Rather, we must chase them away and kill them if necessary to avoid from having any contact with them. Prohibition number 57 also relates to wars, that when one makes siege on a city, one is prohibited from destroying any fruit-bearing trees. In the course of the war, in order to cause pain and discomfort to the people of the city being attacked, one might be tempted to cut down the trees in order to keep them from having fruit. The Torah then commands in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 20, verse 19, Le'sashchis es eitza, do not destroy the tree, ve'eisei le'sichres, and do not cut it down. And as explained in the end of the Tractate Makkos, that this verse, which also states, Mimenu seichel, you shall eat from it, this is the prohibition not to cut down the tree. And if anyone cuts down such trees, the person is punished by malchus, by lashing. And not only cutting off a tree at the time of war is prohibited, but the Rambam tells us in his legal code that cutting down a fruit-bearing tree at any time is prohibited under this biblical prohibition. However, there are certain mitigating circumstances, such as when the tree is damaging other trees or damaging crops or the soil, or one can gain more money for the tree after cutting it down, that the wood is worth a great deal of money. In many of these cases, it is explained in Shulchan Aruch that one is allowed to cut down the tree. However, a Rav should be consulted, since this is a very serious prohibition. Furthermore, our sages say in the Gemara that it is connected with an idea of sakana, that it is a dangerous thing for the person to cut down such a tree. As it says in the Talmud, that people are sometimes cut down early in their life as a result of cutting down a tree before its time. And this prohibition does not only apply to fruit-bearing trees, but actually anything, any object is prohibited from being destroyed unnecessarily by the prohibition Bal Tashchis. For example, burning up a garment for no reason, or breaking some vessel for no reason. In any of these cases, the Rambam says that the person is lashed. And the reason is we are not allowed to destroy things unnecessarily. And even to destroy our physical powers and not take care of our body is also a type of Baal Tashchis, that we are not allowed to destroy things for no reason. Once Rabbah was very, very cold, and he instructed people to break apart a wooden chair and use the wood from this chair in order to make a fire to warm him up. Rabbah's student asked, "But it seems you are violating the prohibition of Baal Tashchis. Why? How can we destroy such a chair?" So Rabbah answered him, "Baal Tashchis de gufa adif. The prohibition against destroying my body is even more important. And by destroying this chair, I will warm up my body and be able to protect my physical health. And if I do not do that, I would also be violating this prohibition of Baal Tashchis. Therefore, better to burn the chair and save my body." The final two commandments of today's portion relate to cleanliness of the camp at the time of war. Positive commandment 192 is the commandment to designate a specific place outside the camp in which people should excrete and relieve themselves. This commandment derives from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 23, verse 13, which states, "V'yati yelecha michutz lamachane," that there should be literally a hand, meaning here a place for you outside the camp. And rather than relieve oneself in any place and even between the tents in one's camp, like the non-Jewish nations do at the time of war, the Rambam says, rather the Jewish army should sanctify themselves and keep the camp clean, to designate a place outside the camp. As the Sifra explains, the word yad, hand, means makom, a place. Quoting the book of Shmuel Aleph, chapter 15, verse 12, "V'hine matziv le yad, I will set up for him a place." Yad, again, which literally means hand, in this context means a place, a designated place outside the camp. And the general of the camp, or the leader, is required to designate such a place. What is the purpose of such a command? In his Guide for the Perplexed, the Rambam gives two reasons. First of all, that the soldiers, even at the time of war, must be reminded that they are not animals. They are still human beings, and they have a sacred function in the world, and must not demean themselves to the level of a beast. A second and more subtle reminder of this commandment is to instill in the soldiers a sense of the presence of God with them no matter what they are doing. That although they are in war, they are nevertheless in the presence of Hashem and must be carrying out Hashem's will, doing what He wants. And this requirement to keep the camp pure and clean is a reminder that Hashem is in their midst. And as the Chinuch says, this is the reason for the tremendously serious punishment for this offense. As the verse concludes, "V'shav me'acharecha," that should you not keep it clean, then Hashem will turn away from you, that the divine presence will leave the soldiers and leave the camp should they not conduct the camp in a proper manner, since this is a reminder that Hashem is among them. And so too, positive commandment 193 takes it a step further, that the individual soldiers, aside from having the specific place where they are required to relieve themselves, must carry with them amongst their weapons a spade or some sort of tool in which to dig, in order that when they go to this place, they should first dig a hole, and then after relieving themselves, should use this spade to take dirt and cover over their waste. This derives from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 23, verse 14, which concludes after saying in previous verses that it were referring to going out in a camp which is at war. The verse says, V'yase tiye lecha al azeinecha, that you should have a spade or a digging implement with you together with your weapons. As the Sifri explains, the word azeinecha means makam ziyunecha, the place where you keep your weapons should also have a spade, something to dig and cover over the waste. Aside from the function of this commandment, to keep the camp clean and to keep the presence of the Shekhinah among the Jewish soldiers, as in the previous commandment, our sages in the Talmud learn additional hints from this commandment. As the Gemara says in Ksubas, why does it say that you should use this Yoseit to cover together with Azeinecha? The Gemara says that you should read Azeinecha from the word Aznayim, your ears, that you should cover over your ears, that when a person speaks Lashon Hara to you, undesirable talk, you should fill up your ears, close them up so that you should not hear. In addition, they ask, why is it that we were given fingers, and especially fingers in such a shape, like a yoseit, like a peg? The reason we were given fingers, says the Gemara, that if somebody speaks Lashon Hara to us, we should take these fingers and stick them in our ears so that we should not hear what is being said. And so too, says the Gemara, why is it our ears were formed in such a way that part of the ear is hard, and another, the lower part of the ear, is soft, the earlobe is soft? The reason is, the Gemara says, again, that we should take our aznayim, our ears, and take the soft part, fold it up, and use it to stuff up our ear, so that we should not hear the undesirable talk, the Lashon Hara, about another person. And as explained in Chassidus from the Baal Shem Tov, that the Lashon Hara causes not only damage because you are thinking bad about the other person, but also speaking about a person's bad traits, even if they are true, helps arouse these bad traits in the person and causes them to act even more according to the way you were speaking. That once it is brought down into the world of speech and brought to from a concealed state to a revealed state, this helps on a spiritual level to encourage and strengthen this trait in the person, this undesirable trait. So rather than allow such talk to take place, we should rather cover up our ears, stuff them up with our fingers or with our ears, figuratively, or more so, refuse to listen to such speech, and therefore cause the one who is speaking the Lashon Hara to stop, and therefore encourage Avos Yisrael and unity among the Jewish people.